Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 68, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hello, I am Josh from the Valley this time.
Hi, I'm Tom, and I'm in Norfolk, Virginia.
Nice.
And this is Allison from Los Angeles, and even more in the Valley, Tarzana.
Ooh. The listeners are going,
like, for
what?
Sure.
Yeah, they're like, Tarzana.
Everybody who listens to this who's not in LA is going, why do I care?
Exactly. You don't care. It's very silly. All right. First thing I want to talk about is the news. I only have two items. First thing is they finally have decided the casting of the boss on The Office, and they went with Mr. James Spader.
Oh. And that was my choice out of all the people they had in that episode.
I was pulling for Catherine Tate, but yeah, it probably wasn't going to happen.
That's a long shot.
Oh, yeah, that was a long shot.
I know, but I was hoping. I was really, really hoping. But you know what? James Spader's a good second choice.
He was very funny in that episode.
He was. He'll bring a pretty interesting, different dynamic to the show.
And he's got just enough crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he does crazy well.
He does well, yes. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, of all the different guys they interviewed in the finale, he was probably the most interesting one.
I wonder if they knew it going into the finale and they're just telling us now.
I doubt it. I think they wanted to see how... I don't know. Everybody played off of each other.
I don't know. They played up his character quite a bit in the finale as opposed to some of the others who just got a couple scenes here and there.
Well, some of them were clearly stunts, like Ray Romano. Come on. We knew that wasn't...
Or Jim Carrey at the very end. That was clearly a stunt.
Okay. Hated it.
Nice. All right. Second piece of casting news, actually, is Lisa Edelstein from House, who played Cuddy. We announced that she left House, and now she has been cast on The Good Wife.
Oh, cool.
I don't know. She's a new character, I'm sure. It says it's a multi-episode arc, but you know how those go. Sometimes it turns into permanent.
Cool. She'll be a good fit on that show, I think.
So I'm glad she's employed. Yes. How about that? Because I thought she got treated very badly over on House.
Yeah, very badly. So
it'd be interesting if they used her in the state's attorney's office. Hmm. That could be fascinating. But
I agree. Yeah.
I only watched like the first half of season one of The Good Wife, and so I actually don't know what's going on right now.
Ooh, well, lots of stuff.
Well, this season they added Alan Cumming to the cast, and he's fantastic.
Yeah,
that goes without saying. It's Alan Cumming. Yeah, but he brings a whole cool dynamic to the show.
I think my issue was I literally had too many shows at one point, and something had to go.
I hear you.
It just fell off. But the next thing is I want to talk about our poll. The results are in, and for our new show that we're going to talk about is Community.
Drum roll, please.
Oh, thank you. I just gave them.
no dramatic pause or anything. So is Community. Okay.
And we've talked about Community a couple of times in the podcast.
We talked about the two-part finale of this season. Yeah. That's about it so far.
And I'm guilty of never having really watched it. So
it's a thoroughly addictive show. Like, I personally was like, yeah, I don't care about it that much. And then Modern Warfare aired the first paintball episode, and everybody on my friends list on Facebook and on Twitter were going, this episode of Community was amazing.
So I'm like,
okay, fine, I'll watch it. I watched it and I was hooked. It blew my mind.
Well,
yeah, I've been hearing for a long time that this is a great show, and this gives me an excuse to go back and catch up on it.
There you go.
So we're going to talk amongst ourselves and figure out which episodes we're going to watch. I'm assuming we're going to do about two or three episodes.
Okay.
So that we'll have something to discuss.
I should get Brian in on the loop on this, because
he's a big Community guy.
He blew through seasons one and two really quickly a couple months ago.
Okay. So we'll know our list, and we'll... figure out what we're going to talk about, and then we'll talk about it next week. The old show that got barely won by a very, 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 very small margin.
This was a nail biter. It was, because I was pulling for one of them.
And I was pulling for the other.
Dun, da, da, da.
So,
and I was pulling for one that got my vote and no others.
And which one was that?
What that was Deadwood, the quality show.
Okay, Deadwood is a great show.
It didn't even end, it just stopped.
That's true.
Yeah, sadly.
Because he had to go and do John from Cincinnati.
God, don't run.
Topic, drum roll, please.
Sorry. Okay, drum roll.
All right, old show was Babylon 5. And that I'm really excited about because maybe I can get people interested to watch the show because I already know which three episodes I'm going to pick. Because you got to have a little bit of intro, and then you need to see the new captain. That's pretty much what it is. I'm two episodes from season one, the premiere of season two, to introduce you to the new captain. Let's go.
Okay. I'm into it. This finally gives me an excuse to actually watch it all the way through.
And it's all on Netflix streaming. Yay!
So you who are listening can watch along with us. Yay!
And some of us have all the DVD box sets.
Well, nerd. Aren't we
special? Yeah, well, I was like, I do too. I have a Ranger.
Double nerd!
I have a Ranger pin. Neener, neener, neener.
Oh my god.
And the novels. And the comics.
Wow.
We could have our geek off later. All right. The first shows we want to talk about, we've got a bunch of finales. Yeah. And first up was the season finale of Game of Thrones.
Woohoo!
And we do know that it's been picked up for season two, so even though this
is... You forgot one piece of news.
Oh, right. They cast the wife of Stannis Baratheon.
That's not the one I was talking about. Just one more thing.
What's that?
Oh, Peter Falk.
Oh!
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yep.
Go ahead, you do it, Tom.
No, Peter Falk, who played Columbo for NBC and then ABC for years in a series of movies, as well as the grandfather in The Princess Bride, passed away at the age of 83 on Thursday.
Very sad.
Very sad.
Moment of silence.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, let's back up and...
Okay. Okay, back to...
Finales.
Back to finales. Okay.
Back to Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. This finale... I had a huge finale party over here, by the way.
And, yes, you did.
Yes, and it was great. We were... All of us were there, right?
Except for...
Yeah.
Yeah, Allison was here too. Allison, yeah, I thought I was like, oh, wait. Yes, she brought the pie.
No,
yeah. Allison brought that amazing meat pie.
But what I was going to say...
Pie.
Is that what was great about it was that when the episode...
Everything, yeah.
Everyone at the very end, when the last shot, everyone cheered.
Yes.
And I thought that was fantastic.
I had no idea where this was going at all. And because usually when they showed those dragon eggs, I thought, oh, well, they're relics or they're petrified or something. I didn't know they were real.
Well, they were petrified. Okay.
Yeah, I thought the dragons were very telegraphed.
See, the thing is, I figured that it was definitely going to be going in that direction eventually, just simply because they kept showing them to you, you know, constantly. It's like it was always there. It's like, oh, and remember the dragon eggs? And here are the dragon eggs. And in case you forgot the dragon eggs, here's the dragon eggs.
Yeah.
Remember those dragon eggs? Here's the dragon eggs.
Yeah, and
so
eventually
we were going to see something happen.
Yeah, Martin telegraphed it just as hard in the book with, like, references to the eggs, and there's like this whole thing with Danny having dreams about dragons.
Oh, okay.
So like it was very highly telegraphed, but I have to say, didn't take away from the impact of finally seeing them.
No, I thought that they were fantastic.
Yeah,
they were good dragons.
That was my biggest fear, that we haven't had a lot of CG in this, so you can only CG the dragons. I was afraid that they were going to come off cheesy just because we haven't had that in the show yet. But
right.
But that wasn't the case at all. They looked fantastic.
Oh, they were good.
They look better than some big-budget special effects-laden features in the cinemas right now that nobody's going to see.
Which I still haven't seen.
Stop. Let's stay on topic.
This is TV, not movies.
Now, what they'll look like later when they're bigger, who knows? But as little baby dragons, I really want one of those.
Oh, totally, yes.
Can I have my own dragon? But I think that this, the finale was really good. I mean, they stole a little bit from book two, the beginning. A little bit. But it worked because it left everything in a really exciting place. We had the Night Watch is going out en masse to go find out about the White Walkers.
That's the part that was taken from both.
You've got Rob's been declared King of the North.
Oh, fantastic.
That was a great moment. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
You've got Sansa contemplating throwing Joffrey off the parapet.
That was the first moment I have actually liked Sansa. You know, I mean, I've gone through this entire series just really wishing someone would throw her off a parapet. Finally.
Yeah.
She actually did something that made me think, oh, go girl.
Yeah, you know? I think all of us at the party, when there was that moment where she was contemplating it, we were all like, do it.
I actually think the best line was when she said, perhaps my brother will give me a gift and give me your head.
That was awesome.
She threw Joffrey's line back at him, which was terrific.
That was so great. And what was funny was, like, it didn't feel out of character for her.
No.
It was the first moment she showed a little guts and a little sense.
Right.
And that was great. It's like, oh my God, she's got a brain in there. Who knew?
Well, I think she was blinded by the whole teenagers. Remember, she's 13 and teenagers fall oogly boogly for whoever. But she's excited
by the idea of becoming a princess and then a queen.
Right. And so, as soon as he kills her father, then all that just goes away. You know, the blinders are lifted.
You'd be a real downer. Yeah, you beheaded my father. We are so done.
It's like, not only did you behead my father, you then dragged me to show me his head on a stake.
Yeah. So she's over
him. We are so broken up. I'm sorry.
Well, I am so not going to the prom with you now, Joffrey.
But yeah, she's over him, except that he still is talking about he wants to have children with her, and she's just like...
Well, he wants a son for his legacy. And,
right, I understand the concept, but her thing is, in her head, she's broken up with him, and he is not.
In his head, he's like, you are only here as a womb for me now.
Exactly. Right. She's a walking womb.
Yeah, there is no love between them, and that's okay by me, because Sansa deserves better.
Oh, that was painful.
And Joffrey deserves death.
Let's talk about the sister I adore, Arya.
Arya.
I just love
how the guy keeps calling her boy and she doesn't get it until he has to explain to her why.
Well, what's so funny is like whenever she like goes out into the city and is by herself, everybody calls her boy.
Right.
Everybody thinks she's a boy.
Yeah, and then he just chopped her hair off. Ew! Yeah. She now looks all... But I like it. I like the haircut because now she gets it. Oh, I'm supposed to be a boy. Okay.
And then we have the blacksmith son. Or the blacksmith... He's not the son.
He's the bastard.
The bastard. Yeah. Robert's bastard, who is now part of the caravan going to the wall.
Right, yeah. He was the blacksmith's apprentice.
Right, the blacksmith's apprentice.
So the thing that's great is he has no idea who his father is, and he doesn't understand why all this excitement is going on around him and why he's getting sent to the wall. He's like, what the heck? So...
And what's funny is, like, it wasn't until I saw the show that it finally clicked that this blacksmith apprentice that she met in the caravan is the same guy.
I'm a little further in the book. I had figured, it takes a while to figure
it
out.
It does take a while, yeah. Like, after that, now reading stuff in the second book, a lot of it makes sense now, because, like, I won't go into it yet.
Yes.
it's easier when you have an actor to visualize.
Exactly,
like, oh,
yeah.
That's him, right.
Because, like, when you're reading the book, you have the scene between Ned and the blacksmith apprentice pretty early on. Then all this other stuff happens, and then at the very end, Arya meets up with this blacksmith apprentice again. I'd totally forgotten about him.
Right.
Who else knows that the blacksmith's apprentice is Robert's illegitimate kid?
I think all of us.
No, he's saying...
Who else in the story?
In the story.
Obviously his boss knows, because his boss sent him away very specifically. So the blacksmith
and Littlefinger, and I don't think anyone else.
No, well, that's not true.
I just read a scene in the second book where it's more people. It reveals who actually sent him away.
Yeah, and the thing is There's a reason.
But I mean, as far as we know now.
We don't really know who knows. Mm-hmm. But there was a reason he was sent away, because it's going to get bloody.
Blood will.
It's Game of Thrones.
The streets will run red with the blood of the bastards.
Yes.
Yes.
So, what else happened? Tyrion. We haven't talked about Tyrion.
Tyrion and what's his companion's name?
Shay.
Shay.
Yeah.
So Daddy says Daddy sucks up to Tyrion after all these years, and Tyrion's
he had a Hallmark moment with Dad.
Well, the only thing is, the reason that he had that Hallmark moment is because Tywin has given up Jaime for dead. And so he's like, I only have one son left.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was really hoping Caitlin would sever Jaime's head from his shoulders.
Well,
that's
to
not
going to
happen,
won't.
Because he's a game piece for
her. Right.
He's very valuable, and he would not be as a corpse.
Yeah, who's to say she won't later? Like, the scene between her and Rob at the tree was fantastic. Where he's like, I just want to kill them all. And she's like, we have to get Sansa and Arya back. Then we'll kill them all. I was like, yes!
Priorities.
The flip side of the conversation between Cersei and Joffrey.
That's true,
yeah.
They're
We like Caitlyn and Rob.
It's like, we want them to kill them all.
All right, let's wrap up this one real quick. Basically, two thumbs way the heck up.
This is by far one of the best shows of this whole year for me.
I have no idea where this series is going, except for I'm probably going to buy the books and find out. But I had lunch with a good friend, a retired Navy chaplain, on Thursday, and he loves this. Everybody loves this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you watch it, you love it. That's all there is to it.
I don't know anybody who has watched it and not loved it.
Well, I find that the love is different. Like, if you've read the books, you love it more.
Yeah.
But if you haven't read the books, you still love it. You just don't love it as much.
It takes a little bit longer for you to get into it. I have a friend who hasn't read it, and he sort of gave up on it because he thought it was just going to be another HBO, everything's about sex kind of show.
They only had, like, one sex scene.
I know. He's weird that way. But anyway, he thought it was just an all sex show, so he didn't bother. And I'm like, dude, it's really not. So when he was visiting me out here,
you made him watch some.
Well, episode 9 aired, and I'm like, listen, I know you haven't watched it, you're not caught up, but I need to watch this episode. So he's like, okay, fine. So I watched it. He was in the room, and he's like, you know what? I'm gonna give this show a shot now. You just watched like the biggest reveal of the whole season.
Can I say?
Someone who has deliberately not read the books until I've seen the show, because I want to get all the surprises while I'm watching it. You know, I don't want to have read the books and be waiting for the stuff to happen. I can say that I think it got started a little slow, but it was interesting enough to keep me watching, and it's been getting gradually more and more interesting, and the characters becoming richer as it goes along, because the characters were a little flat in the beginning, but it does get more interesting and more developed as it goes. So I really have been enjoying this all the way through.
I agree, and I felt the same way reading the books the first time.
Tom had a comment.
Yeah, I have three quick comments. Number one, I love the way that the female characters are so diverse, because you have people you just can't stand, from people who are young and have to grow up quickly, and all different stripes. Two, some of Martin's fans responded to the criticism of Ned's death, saying that I'm not doing hero's journey, and so many people are so used to hero's journey because of Star Wars, et cetera, that when we see a different story structure, it kind of throws us for a loop. And finally, they've given a name to how they use sex for exposition. Sexposition.
That's pretty much. Yeah. They're like, HBO wants sex. Okay,
all in the character.
Yeah, we actually got a great example of that with the old guy in this last episode. Which was one of
the
great scenes,
Picel,
especially the end of it.
And it's that one prostitute, Roz, who seems to just be...
take over the kingdom.
She's got, like, all the dirt on everybody.
Yeah, because everyone, for some reason, tells her basically all the exposition that you can't get through action, they randomly tell her.
So, like, I know it's never going to happen, but, like, now I can see, like, a prostitute uprising in King's Landing.
I swear to God, the last scene of all the books is going to be her, you know, becoming Empress of the World. Because
but she's not in the book.
She's not on everyone.
Yeah, you know? She's not in the book. She's an invention for this show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, wrapping that up, thumbs up. We're moving on to the Killing season finale.
Thumbs down.
I have two words for this finale. Hated it with a passion.
That was three words.
That was five words.
Okay, sorry. Hated it with a passion.
Yeah, five words.
I did them with a passion. I'm not coming back next year.
I will echo you. I am out.
I was so angry. Like, I actually screamed at my TV at the end. Like, seriously? Seriously?
You know, I haven't been watching The Killing, but I keep hearing, you know, oh, it's so good, you should watch it, you should watch it. And then all of a sudden, it gets to the last episode, and I'm hearing all these people who told me to watch it before going, it's horrible, it's terrible.
Oh,
maybe not.
I would
be really interested to see if they blew their Emmy chances with that episode.
Yeah, they might have.
Like,
the backlash was so... I was really,
you guys can't talk at the same time.
I know. Okay, I was really, like, pulling for it. But the last episode, I was like, I don't like where this is going, but I figured there would be a twist. There was a twist, and I didn't like it.
It was awful.
Because it didn't make any sense.
None at all.
And to make it worse, they've been, for like four or five episodes, they've been spinning their wheels doing nothing.
Yeah.
Not giving you any story, not changing anything, and just wasting your time with red herrings.
Oh, had that great character episode 11.
Well, yeah, I know, but
yeah,
other
but
that
than should that, have been like episode 4 or 5. Come on.
Other than that, they've been spending a lot of episodes giving you red herrings, and you know it's red herrings, and you know it's not the killer, and they've just been spinning their wheels. And to after doing that for about four or five episodes, to have the freaking audacity at the end of the episode to not solve the crime.
Yeah.
And so you get to the very end and you're like, yeah, we don't know who the killer is. Come back next season. I think not.
Why did AMC give it a second season before they finished the first one?
Because the ratings were... Well, they do that. If the ratings are really high for the first couple of episodes...
They weren't that high.
Well, it was getting critical acclaim.
It was
so.
Getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah, it was getting a lot of buzz.
Now it's got the wrong kind of... I mean, seriously, there were articles in the trades about how much people hated the finale.
Yeah, it was awful.
There were several mainstream critics, including Maureen Ryan, formerly of Chicago Tribune, and now she's writing for AOL TV. But she just launched into a huge diatribe against the show.
Yeah.
But she's right. You can't treat your audience like that. You can't. You can't emulate what Twin Peaks tried to do, but at least Twin Peaks had style. This has no style.
Well, that was the thing. At least with Twin Peaks, even though it was ridiculous, we had a killer.
Yeah, they actually reveal who the killer is.
Yeah.
And this, they go, this is the killer. Psych. Mm-hmm. Come back next season.
Oh.
No.
No.
I'm done.
No. Bad. Yeah. Just furious.
Oh, I'm livid about it.
And I don't know anyone who's actually going to watch season two. Of all the people that I know who watched The Killing.
I have a writer buddy who loved it. So
really?
What?
There's always one.
Oh, you know who's good? You know who would love this ending? Film geeks who love European crap.
No, but European films usually play fair with the audience. They would not lead you through so many red herrings to have that completely out of the blue.
Yeah,
but you know, like, they're probably like, ooh, it's so different. It gave us an open ending. It's like, no, open endings work in certain cases. When you've had 12 episodes of build-up to one thing and then to not have that thing, that's a letdown. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up. We can only yell and scream at something for so long.
I could yell and scream about this for hours.
I have not heard this much outrage since the ending of Seinfeld, though. I got to
Well, yeah, but at least Seinfeld had several entertaining seasons before the terrible ending.
Yes. Yeah.
This is true.
This was just awful. But all right, next, you guys wanted to talk about Treme, and since I am only watched the pilot, I cannot participate in this conversation. So go forth and speak. You have 6 minutes.
I love Treme.
This episode was amazing.
And the whole episode was great overall. You know, I mean, I think the thing that we're thinking of is that
the very ending.
But I mean, before we get to talk to before we address that part, the whole episode altogether was just terrific. You know, I mean, as usual for Treme. But I loved all the bits with the chief being absolutely completely impossible during the recording.
I love that. And what I loved about Big Chief was how he was just so adamant about how everything is better in New Orleans.
Yes.
And how his son is just like fuming about it. Like, I absolutely love the scene where like they take him to the African History Museum.
Yes.
And they're looking at like this headdress from Liberia that's like 500 years old. And he's like, oh yeah, they got that from us. And his son's like, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's from the Black Crows down the street. And the thing is, he's saying it like he does it so straight, you think, are you completely out of your mind? And then he turns to the reporter and he winks.
Yeah.
And you know he is just screwing with his son's mind because that's what he loves to do.
I know. And like that, and it was that moment I was like, okay, that's why he's like being so blah about these great recording sessions with these amazing artists that they're doing.
Right. Because he just loves to screw with his son.
Yeah, which is great. And, like, I've been kind of, like, iffy about Chief this season because he didn't seem as strong a character this season starting out, but he's definitely coming back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And thing with the museum and the recording sessions was so amazing. And, like you said, especially because he's in these sessions with real legendary musicians.
Yeah, I mean,
actors portraying.
Yeah, it's like you've got Dr. John in the studio with you, for God's sake. And
I think they're leading us to that they are going to actually do some of the recording in New Orleans.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, obviously going there, and you know it's kind of interesting seeing this as sort of like Big Chief's like second leg of his journey, where like he's trying to sort of acclimate to how New Orleans has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult for him. And, you know, like last season, it was very much him sticking to the roots, sticking to what he had always known. And this season is more of him sort of cutting loose and trying to find out what more is out there, but still not willing to accept it.
Yeah.
I think shifting plot lines, I think one of my favorite moments in the episode is when the city councilman reams Tony's daughter.
Oh, that was so great.
It was so long in coming, but that was so great.
I have loved this character from the moment he got on screen, but that scene just blew him out of the room for me. I was like, you, sir, I will vote for you for president. You are amazing.
The thing that's really interesting about...
I cheered him when he did that.
Yes, yes.
The thing that's interesting about that plot line is last season, I guess it was probably the season finale when he mentions when he's teaching Kate Chopin's The Awakening. And if you've read that book, which I did in college, mm-hmm. you know how it ends with the heroine walking into the river to drown herself.
Oh.
So as soon as they said that, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course they did. But I like the way they've handled this has been pretty realistic because I've had friends who've dealt with suicide in the family, and it's devastating. And a lot of times, the family is not mourning together; they're not communicating.
Right.
They're just doing their own thing.
Huh.
And the way they've been doing it, I thought, has been very accurate, very realistic, and very gut-wrenching.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's more that I would love to talk about, but we're running out of time, so we need to talk about the ending.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh my God! That just.
It ripped my heart out.
So
oh my
much.
God.
I literally gasped
and
when that happened.
I feel bad because I cannot for the life of me remember this guy's name.
Neither can I.
The characters, and you know what's funny? Because I just read an article about him and I still can't remember the character's name.
I have absolutely...
He's one of these characters, you know, you just never expect anything like that to happen because you figure, well, he's just one of the, you know, the background musician
he's a background,
guys.
But
there forever.
His relationship with Annie was very sweet and very cool. And I just love, like, their scenes together were so great. And then just to have this scene where he gets shot point blank in cold blood, I was like...
Out of nowhere.
Are you kidding me? I was speechless.
It just haunted me for like hours after the show.
Oh God, me too. Like that was That was such a gutsy move on their part to do this.
It really was. And the thing is, it was based so much in reality because that kind of thing, you know,
happened all the time.
But it really just sort of hit home just like how random and how brutal the violence was.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it, like, still thinking about that, like, my heart breaks because...
And they didn't telegraph it, which is what I like.
Not at all.
It just came out of it. That's part of the power of it is that
it totally came out of the blue.
You're going along and you're watching, and then all of a sudden it just happens.
Yeah.
And it just, it literally took my breath away.
Yeah. So thumbs up for Chimay for me. How about you guys?
Loved it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, this is a real, I was sort of iffy about this season, but now I'm fully on board. I am ready for all the rest of this season. I can't wait for it.
Okay. I'm glad they've got a season 3 pickup.
Yes, thank God.
Falling Skies?
Yes, Falling Skies. Series premiere, two hours. It's basically two episodes that they've stuck back to back.
Here, that exactly is my problem with the premiere. They really should have done a two-hour movie, not just 2 hours smushed together.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
It felt like two different episodes.
If it hadn't had so many commercial breaks, it would have been an hour long anyway.
Well, limited commercial interruption.
Yes.
They did that too? Oh,
yeah, it was an hour and 20 minutes instead of an hour and a half.
I noticed that. Yeah. I watched it online. I didn't watch it on...
Yeah, so the commercial breaks didn't bother me because I fast-forwarded. But,
yeah, well, I DVR'd it too, but, you know, I had to fast forward like about every 3 minutes. So, you know.
Oh, God, that's BBC America bad.
I was going to say, that's not the fault of the show. That is the fault of the network.
Nothing is BBC America bad.
Ugh.
But anyway, go on to the show.
Yes.
I like the premise. I liked how they started the very opening. I love the fact that it's set after it's happened. So this isn't This isn't the other invasion series that we've seen a plethora of recently.
Right.
I just thought that hour one was kind of okay. Mm-hmm. And then hour two was kind of your typical sci-fi trope. You know, you come against renegades, blah, blah, yada, yada. I don't know. Hold up.
I will agree with the concept of the second hour was you come up against, like, you think everybody should be unified, and then, of course, you have the jerks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree that I've seen that a million times, and usually I find it very annoying. However, in this particular case, I liked it because the leader of the bad guys was intellectual. He was interesting. He had some of the best lines.
I don't know that I'd call him intellectual.
He really was, though.
But he wasn't your typical thug who you would expect in a role like this.
No, not at all. I mean, they were having
He wasn't some redneck survivalist.
No, right, exactly.
I would consider Will Patton's character more of a redneck survivalist.
Exactly. The leader of the Massachusetts Second, I believe.
Yeah, he was
more of a redneck than that guy because they were having a historical, philosophical conversation about the end of the world. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And you see, that's what I liked about it. What I really liked was how they made Noah Wiley's character a history professor.
Right.
Because one of the things that I always love to do is sort of look at our world through the prism of history, and that's what he's doing in this situation.
And I also think they should be listening to him more.
Yeah, because he's bringing some insight.
Yeah, but the thing
insight.
Is, it's easy when you've got, you know, military people or national, whatever they're supposed to be, versus a professor. Trust me, been there, done that.
Yeah.
They're not going to listen to the professor.
They're not going to listen to a civilian.
Of course they're not going to listen to him, but you know what? More often than not, he's going to end up being right.
However,
of course he is. He's Noah Wiley.
It's my show.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is in a regular situation with all military personnel, I would agree, but at this point, there's hardly any military personnel left.
Yeah.
So I mean, a lot of civilians who've picked up guns and are trying to figure out how to be military personnel. So I think in this situation, he actually has more of a shot to get them to listen to him.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or I kind of don't like the kid, his older son?
The older son has the potential to be annoying. He's not annoying yet to me, but I can see why he could be because...
He's not like that brat on V.
No.
He already reached annoying for me.
No.
And his younger son reached annoying like by scene number two for me.
No, no, but I totally, I like his younger son a lot.
I don't particularly like small children in
apparently, in you just hate children. Okay. Oh my God.
All right, well,
you know, it's like, I'm sorry, I don't find them cute and winsome and precocious. I find them irritating.
I know, because they're here to take over for us, I know. Like, but, they're here to replace us.
No, but I have to say, as
it's
much...
Just, you know, they give them dialogue that are impossible for small children to have. It's like, no, I'm sorry, they don't, little kids really don't talk like tiny 35-year-olds. And you know, they talk like kids, and they get in the way like little kids, and they aren't tiny soldiers, they're kids.
Well,
you know, it's like the one who they have, you know, running around with the gun. I'm sorry, he's not the artful dodger, he's a 10-year-old. And he'd act like a 10-year-old. And if you put a gun in his hand, he'd just act like, you know, a 10-year-old with a gun, and he'd probably shoot somebody's foot off.
Well, that's the thing is that's true and not true, because we've seen in this real world they are training, there are countries where they train children to be soldiers. And they are soldiers. So it's not, it's more circumstance. We're used to children here in our circumstances acting like children.
Well, yeah, but that's, we're talking about, you know, cultures and you
and
know,
the,
right,
and
in
this
the
is
least,
in America, yes.
Where they're raised practically from birth to be soldiers.
But
this kid has had 5 minutes to learn how
He's had 6 months.
He's had
six months. Which is different. And they show that he's not a perfect soldier. He still makes mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting that they're desperate enough. It's not so much that the kid's like, oh, I want to be a soldier. It's more, we don't have enough people to wield these weapons, so we'll take whoever we can get.
Right.
So I don't have a problem with that. And then... the children in this show are by nowhere anywhere near as annoying as the kid from V. Like, that kid was so annoying.
Oh, God.
I prayed for his death.
And when we got it, I was so glad.
With faint praise.
Right. These kids, the little kid, I think that every complaint and everything he said makes sense. He was like, yes, we're running for our lives, but can I have a birthday party?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, yeah, a kid would ask for that. I totally don't have a problem with that.
I totally agree that a kid would have that. And for me, what I liked about this show was it's an alien invasion series, yes, but the alien invasion is more just sort of environmental. It's kind of in the background.
Right.
Like, the main crux of the story is not trying to discover the mystery of why they're here, what they're doing, how do we bring them down.
Well, that is kind of the crux.
It's in it, but
this season on Falling Skies, that's what the show's
going to
be.
Yeah, I was about to say, that is kind of the crux.
Well, I agree that there is that element. It's a very big part of it, but the focus, really, of the show for me was the people and how they deal with this situation more.
Well, yeah, and I like the fact that they also show that you're going to have society changes in, like, class systems are developing between civilians versus soldiers.
Right.
So I thought that's an interesting divide.
Yeah, like, I just think that in most alien invasion series, a lot of that societal stuff is sort of pushed to the back while we focus on the aliens alone. And this is not like that, and that's what I like about it.
Okay, I can see that.
See, to me, I just found that there was absolutely nothing new about this series. And there was nothing that I hadn't seen in, like, you know, a dozen other things that were just
I disagree with you on that.
I agree with you to an extent,
I found
myself
becoming extremely bored with the whole thing. There were times where I wanted to fast forward through it. I just got really, really tired. I found it really, really tedious. I found the characters, with the at the exception, and you brought him up before, of the leader of the rogue group, you know, the group of thugs.
Yeah.
I thought he was interesting, and obviously they're going to be using him more later.
Right.
You know, the previews from the season stuff is correct. He was interesting, but, you know, pretty much everyone else, including Noah Wiley, which is kind of sad because I normally really like him, they're just kind of boring because I was watching caricatures rather than characters, and I wasn't listening to anything that was particularly interesting or that was anything new. I've seen this kind of trope before, and I was just watching it played out for the umpteenth time. I was watching stuff from War of the Worlds, from Tripods, from, you know, any number of invasion flicks, and it was just all thrown together into a mishmash, and into a grinder, and seeing it come out the other end.
I would like to counter, which is, I did see War of the Worlds, and I loved War of the Worlds, But
not
that
the
was,
new one, I hope.
No, I'm talking about the old.
Classic.
Like, yeah. Okay,
yeah.
And I actually watched a TV series, which was like in the 80s or
yeah.
whatever. But
yeah.
even if you include both of those, that was like 20 years ago. So, or whatever. And I have to say, this is a bit different. I mean, you have the same concept of you have
yeah.
to figure out a way to get the aliens off. But War of the Worlds was more concentrated on... You had soldiers who were working in cells, who were very well organized, who were trying to figure out how to get rid of the aliens, and it was very single-minded focus.
Right.
This is more about the civilians and the families, because you've got more civilians than you have soldiers, and you can't fight. They very much have said at the very... They open it up with, we have 800 people or 900 people, and we can't fight them, so we're going to split up and kind of run and hide. So it's not the same... kind of concept, and I think that they have no idea what to do to fight these aliens at all, and
yeah.
I think it is interesting and it is different.
I get the feeling that this is going to be more of a slow burn kind of series. Like it doesn't start with a bang. I'll give you that, but it does start with enough intrigue for me that I'm willing to keep coming back and to see where it goes. And like you, I find the focal shift from only about the aliens to more about the people to be a very interesting take on it.
We're going to move on to the next show, which was, we talked about last week, was The Nine Lives of Chloe King. We talked about the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the second episode?
I watched both the pilot and this week's episode time around.
I have to say the pilot was good. I think the second episode was bland.
I would agree, and I think what's... really detracting from the show for me are the two friends, Amy and
her
Paul.
Her Scooby gang,
because basically they are just caricatures of stupid teenage kids.
I would totally agree with you on that.
And the fact that they're spending so much time on these two characters who I really don't like is just detracting from it for me, because I like Chloe. I think she's a very strong character. I think... she's not quite on the level of Buffy, but she's close. Like,
she could be.
She could be Buffy if you give her a little bit more time. Like, she's got the potential. Like, she can quip very well, and
yes.
that I like.
I will, however, say in the second episode, what threw me out and made me irritated was not so much the friends, was she goes to the funeral of the guy. She kisses a guy and basically kills him.
Yes.
So she goes to his funeral. And immediately goes on a date with another guy. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah.
you just killed the other guy because
yeah.
you kissed him, so you're going to date a new guy.
I
was like,
what the heck? That was
the
thing that really sort of bugged me, was how, like, she was so not willing to accept the fact that if she kisses somebody who isn't her people,
she
will
kill
them.
I was like, dude, seriously. It's not like she has to be a monk. It
yeah.
just means that you have to meet more of your own people. That's all it means.
Yeah.
Okay?
And, like, the only guy she knows who is of her people is kind of a douche.
Well, that's true. Like, I wouldn't say she should date him.
Yeah.
But he was like, let me take you back to our people. I was like, sure, that sounds like a plan. And she keeps resisting that, which I don't
yeah.
understand.
Well, I mean, we're only two episodes in, so I'm hoping that she breaks that resistance at some point.
Yeah.
But
I can see why, because her dad sent her that email that said trust no one.
Right.
So I get that.
Yeah. And I'm willing to see where it goes. It's not the greatest show I've ever seen by any stretch, but
no.
I'm certainly intrigued enough to stick with it for at least a couple more episodes.
I'll check out a couple more, but this one was like, I thought the pilot was pretty good, but this
mm-hmm.
episode I was like, eh. So I'm hoping the next one's better.
I'm just hoping they kill Amy and Paul.
I seriously doubt that. They are the Scoobies.
They are the Scoobies, but my God. Like, okay, Amy is no Cordelia, and Paul is
no Xander. That's true. All right, next up is White Collar.
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
What'd you think, Tom?
I thought it was another solid episode.
You hesitate on great. Okay.
I love that they're letting the background characters do a little bit more this season.
Me too. That's what I liked about this episode, was that it was more of a Diana-centric episode.
Yeah, and she, though it was funny, it's like, oh, can you pull off a British accent? I was like, yes, I think she can.
Which is brilliant.
That was great.
She's British.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I loved seeing, Jane, it's the actress's first name. She was on 24 a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
I
know what you're talking about.
I can't remember her name.
But
she was
the boss. Seeing her as the hard as nails editor.
Yeah. She was great.
Especially at the end when she tries to hire her away from the FBI.
I know. She's like, leave being an FBI agent and be my assistant. That makes perfect sense, right?
And as my assistant, your life will suck.
Yeah.
But I'll pay you triple what you're getting paid at the FBI. She's like, yeah, no. Uh-huh. And I like that when she gave her that ridiculous amount of tasks, she then called the FBI and, like, delegated.
That was so great. And my favorite scene has to be when Peter goes to the truck with the robots, and he's like, I'm an FBI agent. I am commandeering a whatever robot.
that was all pretty good. It was a funny, fun episode. And also, yeah. I like that underneath everything, we have them trying to get the list.
Right.
And
I love again how Peter and the gang are staying one step ahead of Neo and Mozzie.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
That was great.
Everybody's smiling and praying nice, nice, but nobody trusts the other.
Right.
Well, that was great because when Neil shows up at Diana's house, she knows why he's there.
Oh, of course she does.
Of course she does.
Yeah. Oh, and then she's just like, he was like, did you have anything else? Like, nope, everything, it was gone. The list was gone. Everything's taken care of. There's nothing he could have found out. And they, of course, falsify the records because they know he's going to hack in.
Right.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was good.
Like, I love that. And like you, Tom, I'm just very glad that they're putting a little bit more focus on Diana and Jones this season.
Yeah.
Because those are two fantastic characters who have really needed their time in the limelight. And, like...
Though Jones hasn't had an episode all about him. Diana's had a couple.
Diana's had a couple, but you're right. We haven't had a fully Jones-centric episode, but I'm kind of hoping we get one this season. Because, like, it's like third season of White Collar is kind of like third season of Castle, where... third
Esposito.
Season of Castle, we get more focus on Ryan
and
Esposito.
We finally distinguish between Ryan and Esposito.
Yeah.
and in this, we're
aside
getting...
the fact that one's white and one's Latin.
Yeah.
Latin.
Yes.
You sounded like you had a stutter, sorry. So, wrapping up, good episode, thumbs up.
Good solid episode.
And the storyline's going in a really good direction.
Yep.
Next, we're going to talk about the season premiere of Burn Notice.
Which I'm still not caught up on, so I cannot participate, but I don't care about spoilers, so I'll stay in
the
room.
I want to know, is Jesse going to be... The way that they kind of got rid of him at the beginning of the episode, is he, like, gone, or... I don't know.
I thought that was weird. But it seemed like he was in town, so that if they need him, he can...
They can use him, but...
Well, because his whole thing was, he said, I quit my other job so that I could come back to L.A. and help people out. So I got the impression that... As long as it doesn't require them to leave Miami, like this first gig, they had to go somewhere. I can't remember where they went. So Jesse couldn't go. But if they're staying in town, then Jesse can participate. That's the feeling I got. But it doesn't feel like he's necessarily a series regular anymore. But he could be in maybe about half the episodes.
Although his name is in the opening credits, but of course that could be variable depending on, you know, if he's got like a 7 out of 13 deal or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, they basically made it so that because his storyline got wrapped up last season, this was their way of letting him stay. So I think if he was going to be gone, then he just would have been gone. But they were like, oh, I quit my job and I moved back to Miami so that I can help the little people. So I think, yeah, he's back.
I thought it was an okay episode. It's interesting seeing Michael in the new environment. I'm not sure how long the status quo is going to last.
I don't think very long.
It took me a while to realize, oh my gosh, that's Grant Cho from Melrose Place, the original.
Oh, is that who that was?
And he has not aged the most gracefully.
Well, I like that they were showing the difference between how CIA operatives work versus how Michael and his team work, because they literally had them working side by side. So Fee and Sam were rolling their eyes every time the CIA was coming up with something to do, and I thought that was pretty interesting because they're like, psh, I wouldn't do it like that. And then they're like, oh, they gave you a car, so you want us to mess up the engines? Like, oh, they took care of that already with some device. And they kept rolling their eyes at everything the CIA did, which I thought was great.
My favorite exchange during the episode was Grant Cho asking Jeffrey Donovan, have you stayed alive so long? I don't know. I eat a lot of yogurt.
Yeah, that was a good line. It was entertaining, but
I didn't think I thought it was okay, but not great.
I agree. I mean, I had fun watching the episode, but I don't know. It's a, the premiere should have gotten me excited about the season. Like, oh my God, where are we going with this season? This did not do that. It's more of we're waiting to see how long he stays at the CIA before he's like, screw it, and goes back to what he's been doing. That's pretty much what I feel like it's building to. It's all right. Next show I want to talk about is the season premiere of Rookie Blue. And I asked you guys to watch and you didn't, so I'm sad.
You asked us yesterday.
Yes, I know.
Yesterday night.
I know. I'm whining. I understand that. But you should still watch.
I had to drive 8 hours in the car to North Carolina and back yesterday.
All right, you can stop your whining, too. All right, so Rookie Blues season premiere. I watched season one last week, and I loved it. And so I watched season premiere of season two, and I have to say, it pretty much left off where season one ended. I think they all got a break because they all became official police officers, so they all passed their exams or whatever at the end of season one. So now they are official. They're not on probation anymore. But their first job out of the gate went very badly. So I thought that was really fantastic. It's like the best group of the rookies. She's kind of the star, but it's kind of an ensemble. But she's star-ish in the ensemble. She got to be in charge of a crowd control, which she was like, all right, you know, small scale, but I'll take it. And she was her first job that she was in charge of. She was all excited. And right out of the gate, she gets shot.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was pretty good because it was like she was talking to someone, and she's talking to a teenage girl. And the teenage girl she's talking to gets shot in the head, and she gets sprayed with the blood. And it's like everything goes in slow motion. I like they did the whole echo effect where she can't really hear anything, and she's like in a haze, and she doesn't know what's going on. So she sees the girl go down. And then she turns to try to figure out where the bullet or where the shot came from. And just as she turns to look, she gets shot in the chest, but it hits her vest, obviously. But she gets shot in the chest and she goes flying back. And then chaos. And it's great because she knows intellectually she got shot in the chest, but it hurts so much. It actually cracked the ribs. She can't breathe. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is like she got shot. So like for a second, she's kind of panicked and there's blood all over her. And she's freaking out for a moment. And it was all really good. It showed basically how everybody dealt with the situation because everybody, all the other rookie cops were kind of like, it could have been me. She could have been dead. And she, of course, was thinking, I could have got the headshot versus the chest shot.
Right.
So it was kind of like how you deal with that. And she kept trying to tell everybody she was fine, but of course she wasn't, blah, blah, blah. But it's pretty good. I like it, except it does have a Grey Anatomy's problem of, I think by the end of first season, everybody has slept with everybody.
Oh, jeez.
But I have to say, they do it in a better way. Because Grey's Anatomy irritates the crap out of me.
Well, it's all about the drama with that
stuff. But this show is not as much like that. Because they're cops, they can't afford to be like, oh my God, such and such won't date me. It's like, no. After everybody has slept with whoever, people try to go back to being as professional as possible because if you're not professional, you will get the other person killed.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's better than that, I think. Okay. But you still have your little bit of drama, a little bit of angst, but I think it's tolerable on this show.
Okay.
And they have one couple that I'm super, super cheering for, but it makes you feel bad because basically when she first got there, two guys liked her, and for a while you didn't know which one was going to get, you know, she was going to end up with. And she ends up with the guy who seems like the better choice, but I think the other guy loves her more. So it's one of those.
Oh, drama.
Yeah,
yay.
But I'm a girl, so what do you want? I like it.
Okay, fine.
So anyway, I like Rookie Blue. The cases are actually kind of interesting. I really like the characters. The relationship stuff is, I don't think, at an irritating level, but I actually am hooked on one of the pairings. So there you go.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
All right, we want to talk about the series premiere of Suits. It was about an hour and a half, supposedly very little commercials, but yeah, whatever.
They played fair. It was very little commercials.
All right.
I didn't watch it with commercials, so I wouldn't know.
So, impressions. Was this what you thought it was going to be, or was it totally different?
I had absolutely no idea what it was. Like, all I got was an email from you saying, you have to watch Suits this week. And I'm like, okay, I have no idea what it is, so okay, I'll give it a shot. I went in completely blind. No idea what it was about. No idea who was in it. Nothing at all. The only thing I thought was, is this a White Collar spinoff because it's Suits?
So what did you think, though?
I liked it. I mean, it's a legal drama, right. But I found it to be very sharp. I like the characters. It's got Gina Torres, and I am always 100% behind anything Gina Torres is in.
Yes,
except maybe Cleopatra 2525.
That's where I first saw Gina Torres.
Oh wow!
Wow. Okay. I was introduced to her through Firefly, so I have a much better first impression. Anyway, I enjoyed it. I thought the story was pretty good. The case they were dealing with was interesting. The characters, I thought, were very charming. Like, I actually kind of, I liked them. I got a good first impression from them.
I have to say, I don't even know the names of the people yet.
The only one I remember is Harvey.
Yes, Harvey had the potential.
And Mike, I think the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy is Mike. Okay. Yeah. And Gina Torres, I think her name is Jessica.
Yes. But Harvey had the potential to be just this jerk that was uninteresting. Yeah. But he is a jerk, don't get me wrong. He's a complete jerk. But he's got charm. Yeah. He's the definition of a slick lawyer.
Yes.
But I really like his charm. And the other guy, Mike, I like the fact that they show how really smart he is, but that regardless of how smart he is, the real world is hard, man.
Yeah.
And well, not only that, but he might have this voluminous memory, but he's got to know what to do with the facts.
Right. Yeah. And that's where Harvey comes in.
Right.
And, like, okay, the one thing I was kind of, like, about was I very, very early on called how Mike and Harvey were going to cross paths. Like, that just became very obvious to me.
Oh, well, because he saw the interview. Well, I had seen the trailer, so I knew that he was going to get interviewed. So
I hadn't seen any of it, so, like, when I saw that Harvey was holding interviews in the same hotel that he was going to this I was like, okay, this is I know exactly how this is going to play out, and I was right. And
I don't think that was a bad. It wasn't supposed to be a mystery, so
no, it wasn't, and it was okay. Like it happened exactly the way I thought it was going to happen, but their first meeting I thought was very, very well done.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting is the whole premise is a little bit of a departure from the USA Blue Skies approach, because the guy's basically a drug courier.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a drug addict on top of it.
Yes.
And, well, I wouldn't say an addict, but a drug abuser.
Well, no, because there's this one scene where, like, he's flushing all the weed down the toilet, and he's going to flush something else down the toilet, but he stops.
Right. And he keeps it. And they show in the last scene, he's thinking about smoking it because he feels all this pressure.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a drug addict. A casual drug user doesn't need the drugs. I think he kind of needs them.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's going to be a problem later. But I like the friendship that they develop very quickly. I think that's pretty interesting. Especially because Harvey claims he doesn't care about anybody, yet he obviously cares about Gina Torres.
Yeah
he does.
And
but who wouldn't?
Well, yeah, of course, duh.
Oh, and she got to have her dress scene. Like, yeah, she showed up, and she is so tall.
I know. Oh my god.
Well, she's married to Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, but that doesn't make her tall. Yeah. So, but
he's no shrimp himself. So.
Right.
But, I did love that scene between them where they're at the elevator, she's in the dress, and he's like, I have two words for you. And then, like, everything she says, he just responds with, like, another two-word response.
That was great. Yeah.
It was kind of interesting seeing Gabriel Mott cast a little bit against type, because he usually plays a good guy. And so to see him...
Who's Gabriel Mott?
Who does he play?
Yeah, who is he?
He plays Harvey.
Oh, okay. Well, you know... Technically, Harvey is a good guy, but I know what you mean.
He usually plays a really good guy, like boy next door type,
uh-huh.
And to have him play kind of this you know, this prototypical slick lawyer is a little bit cast against type. Also, boy, did they cast these two leads to look a lot alike or what?
Everybody I talked to all thought they were brothers. And I was like, I don't think they're brothers. I was like, are you sure they're not cousins? Like, they do really look alike. It's a little distracting.
Yeah. It is.
I like them both, but they really should have tried a little bit harder to distinguish because, you know, or maybe they did it on purpose. I don't know why.
Well, also somebody pointed out the fact that Harvey is actually, the way they cast him and the way they dressed him, he looks a lot like Nathan from Heroes. What is that man's name?
Nathan Petrelli.
Adrian Pasdar.
Pasdar. They look like, if they cast the two of them, I would have been like, stop lying, they're brothers.
Yeah.
But yeah, he looks a lot like Adrian Pasdar, the way they have him dressed and the way they've got his hair.
Yeah.
And all of that. If I didn't know it wasn't him, I was like, okay, wait, that's not Adrian. Okay.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that. But
yeah,
they
look really similar. But it's like they wanted to get Adrian, and for some reason they couldn't, and so they got this guy. But, I mean, he's fine. I really like him.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a very good, solid first episode for a show. I'm going to stick with it.
Right. I agree. All right. Let's wrap up. Thumbs up. Keep watching Suits.
Yep.
And we will have like I said, the poll is done, so we will be discussing.
And thank you for voting, everybody who did.
Yes. So,
you can't win if you don't play.
So, Community and Babylon 5 are the shows for next week, along with the other summer shows, obviously.
Trekkies, you have failed me.
Star Trek is not completely lost. It will be the following week.
Okay. All right.
All right. So, wrapping up, if you have any feedback, send it to us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook. And we're on follow us on Twitter. That's what it is.
Yes, Twitter is where you follow.
Follow us on Twitter.
Tech Savvy Libya.
At TV Campfire. And we're on Facebook. There you go.
Facebook.com/TV Campfire.
There we go. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.